So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! And how you play it, all about control. And if you can take it, all about your stand. If you can play it, it's all about pain.
And who's gonna make it?
I am the game, you don't wanna play me.
I am control,
no way you can shake me.
I am heavy debt,
no way you can pay me.
I am the pain,
and I know you can't take me.
Look over your shoulder, ready to run. Like a clueless bitch from a smoking gun.
I am the game,
and I may lose. So move on out, you can die like a fool.
Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be.
Come on over, son, no, why don't you ask me?
Don't you forget there's a price you can pay.
Cause I am the game and I want to play.
The game of politics, originating right here out of Louisville, Kentucky. Don't forget to check out our website, LouisvillePolitics.com. Join our RSS feed. Make sure you join our email newsletter and all the other good stuff, and maybe click on a sponsor or two who helps us pay for this show. In the meantime, welcome to it. Just a quick announcement. Dale the Truth will return to the airwaves next Wednesday night with yours truly. He will be back next Wednesday and Thursday and resume his weekly show. Apparently, he's been able to work out a lot of the stuff he was working on, and just got notification of that. We had expected him back the 7th or 8th of August, and right now that is a confirmed date. So get ready for it. You ain't heard nothing yet. Now, in the meantime, on with the show. I tell you, we're going to start doing some quick updates out of Louisville. But I want to get into some national issues. Really, truly, Edward Snowden, the NSA, and Rand Paul and this Chris Christie situation. We'll get into all of that here in a few minutes. For those of you who are regular listeners to the show, we appreciate you. Don't forget, if you're in the queue right now, there's always a couple dozen of you. We thank you very much. But hit that number one on your dial pad to let us know that you want to be heard on air. For everybody else, the call-in numbers are 858-683-1326 or area code 502-805-0334. You know, so if you have any questions, comments, or just want to wrap a while, we'll be here to talk about it. Let's get right to it, though. The Louisville Metro Council removal hearing for Barbara Shanklin has basically concluded. The final arguments, closing arguments, and everything that was prepared today. To my knowledge, the last word I had was that they were actually going to start deliberations tonight. Councilwoman Barbara Shanklin will walk, folks. There's just no doubt in my mind about that. You've got council members David James and Brent Ackerson and a whole host of others out there trying to come up with anything they can to side with Barbara, to give her this reasonable doubt to keep her clean and off of this list of being the second person removed from the Metro Council. There's a reason for that. We've told everybody for a long time now that Barbara Shanklin has just too much dirt, and this whole thing has been contentious from the very beginning, intentionally so. Aubrey Williams has done his best to make this a three-ring circus by making this whole case nothing but an argument and a fight the whole way. Nobody cares about justice here. They just want to make sure that Barbara Shanklin isn't the second African-American removed from the council. You can get mad at me and call me racist all you want to for that statement, but it's the truth. And you're finding out a whole lot now about the Metro Council Democrat members. They're fearful they're going to have to go through this because of the baggage that Barbara Shanklin has on them. Fair enough. But I tell you, here's the thing. With Judy Greene, as I've mentioned time and time again on this show, Judy Greene was removed from office for soliciting, voting to approve, and dispersing the funds to the 100 Black Men program as a grant from the city. And she told the 100 Black Men where to send those funds. She directed the money. Barbara Shanklin went above and beyond that. There's no doubt about that. Barbara Shanklin wrote checks to her family. Notice I said wrote checks. Judy Greene didn't write any checks. Judy Greene didn't sign any checks. Barbara Shanklin did. Barbara Shanklin wrote 113 checks against the Newburgh Community Neighborhood Association that she was, in effect, running. Barbara Shanklin went above and beyond anything that Judy Greene did. And this is what we told everybody after the Judy Greene hearing was done and Judy Greene was removed from office, that this was going to be the precedent set to see if the Metro Council was going to do their job going forward. It is clear, if Barbara Shanklin gets off and is not removed from office, it is very clear that this Democratic-controlled Metro Council does not care about justice. They do not care about fairness and equality at any time, because that's what this is. If this Metro Council can remove Judy Greene, then this Metro Council has more than enough information to remove Barbara Shanklin. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see that happening. I really don't. Yesterday, the city internal auditor, Ingram Quick, was questioned on the stand, and he was talking about these appropriations. You know, Barbara Shanklin was the only member who appropriated funds for this neighborhood group. Then she herself wrote the checks on its account. Now, how can there not be anything wrong with that? How can Judy Greene get removed from office if she didn't write a check? Barbara Shanklin had all kinds of accountability problems. She would commingle her city money, according to Ingram Quick, with private funds in another neighborhood group, the Newburgh neighborhood group that she controls. Intentionally so. It became an accounting nightmare. Intentionally so. She could control the money. She pays her family. She pays her friends. And there's nothing wrong with this, because that's what the Metro Council is going to say. They're going to come back at least one vote, probably 2 to 3 shy of the 14 needed to remove Barbara Shanklin from office. And that, folks, will be the biggest travesty when it comes to this Metro Council as far as their willingness to be open, transparent, and accountable. And they proved it with Judy Greene. Now, on the flip side, if I was Judy Greene's family, you know, Judy Greene died last year, and, you know, the late Judy Greene, and, you know, we still have prayers to her family every day for that, because it's not easy to lose a family member so young. But if I'm Judy Greene's family and Barbara Shanklin walks, I file a civil suit against the city of Louisville, name the mayor and the Metro Council, and sue for millions of dollars. If I was that family, I would argue that her removal from office put so much stress, pressure, and depression on her that created heart problems and everything else that Judy Greene dealt with, and it was one basic cause of her death. I would do that, and I honestly think that they would win. I don't think it would ever go to court and be tried in court, But the family would get one hell of a settlement from the city, our taxes, so that this Democratic-controlled Metro Council could cover their butt by letting Barbara Shanklin off the hook. Knowledge is power, folks. Barbara Shanklin has the power. So I hope beyond hope that this Metro Council does their job correctly and removes her tomorrow or as soon as deliberations are done. But I do not for one second believe they will. I tell you, we've got some major problems here, and we're going to have to expose those problems. We have got, you know, you've got to have 14 out of 21 votes to remove her. Barbara Shanklin only needs 7 votes to keep her job. That's it. But you've got Brett Ackerson out there trying to create a legal loophole, so it's reasonable doubt. You've got Councilman David James out there trying to prove and make sure that there's reasonable doubt. Mary Woolridge, I can give you a bunch of other names. I believe Vicki Aubrey Welch and Madonna Flood may vote to keep her there. You know, and I think that Kevin Cramer asked a very good question. Of course, Kevin Cramer is Republican, right? You know, I think Kevin Cramer asked a very good question. Why didn't Barbara Shanklin just call herself president of the Petersburg-Newberg Group since she wrote all his checks and ran the organization? And Shanklin says she was too busy to serve as president. You know, and then David James goes on record to say, you know, that he doesn't think Barbara Shanklin was trying to hide anything. It's clearly obvious she was trying to hide plenty. She hid her grandson until the media heat got so bad that they proved that he was in jail and getting paid by her. She knew that. She knew that. She only stopped paying him when she got caught. When she got caught. That's the problem, folks. But they're setting the stage to let her off. So we're going to see what happens to this. Hopefully we'll have some word tomorrow or the next day. I don't know. You know, there was only one witness brought in on behalf of Shanklin by Aubrey Williams, her attorney. And he was basically a character witness. You know, Aubrey Williams wasn't stupid enough to bring anybody in there that was going to make Barbara Shanklin look even worse. But he brought in one of the so-called reverends. Yeah, you know, the guys that show up at every event. If you're black, we've got your back, guys. But he brought in Reverend Roosevelt Leisley, who's a Newberg pastor and a former state parole officer and corrections official, just to testify as a character witness on behalf of Shanklin, saying that he's known Shanklin for years and that she's deeply principled and dedicated to her neighborhood. Well, if she was deeply principled and dedicated to her neighborhood, she would never put her principle aside to try this kind of stuff. And her dedication to the neighborhood would have never had to be questioned because she decided she wanted to glorify herself. That's just the way it is. Other news in Louisville, George Givens and Michael Killebrew with the Camp Taylor Fire District has filed a civil complaint against Deputy Chief Steve Atkins. Apparently, they are accusing Atkins of striking them in the groin area, physically threatening them, and all kinds of physical harassment and sexual harassment stuff. This is being reported by Wave 3 News. So go to Wave3.com for the whole story. But what's interesting about this story is the fact that this isn't the first time that Atkins has been named in a lawsuit. In 2004, he was named in a lawsuit because an administration assistant filed a lawsuit against his father, Camp Taylor Fire Chief Harold Atkins, saying that she was harassed by both the chief and his son. So both of these guys, you know, Atkins has been in trouble before. We'll see what happens here. You know, I don't expect much to happen here as usual in Louisville. It's just the way it is. WDRB is reporting a story today. 18-year-old Brajon Ford and 3 accomplices approached a man and attacked him. Ford punched the guy in the face as he was walking away. One of the suspects hit him with a tree log. Then they decided to start ganging him, beating him several times. Oh, by the way, did I mention that the attackers were black, the victim was white, and the whole time they were beating the white guy, they were yelling at him, calling him names like Honky Cracker and White Trash. But this isn't a hate crime, folks. This won't fall into the category of a hate crime here in Louisville, Kentucky. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on that one as well. We've got other news. Let's go national. Let's go national. I'll tell you why. Here is a funny story of the day. Anthony Weiner's campaign, is it a free fall? There's no doubt about that. I can't believe this guy is even staying in the race for mayor of New York, but it's fascinating. A former intern by the name of Olivia Nuzzi is on the front cover of the Daily News. This story, according to TalkingPointsMemo.com. There was an article in the Daily News written by Nuzzi in which she pretty much outlined her experience working on Anthony Weiner's campaign staff as an intern. What makes this story so comical is you've got Anthony Weiner's communications director, Barbara Morgan. TPM called Barbara Morgan to discuss an unrelated story yesterday. And she decided, rather than talk about that, she wanted to go on a curse-filled rant about Nuzzi, calling Nuzzi, and folks, forgive the language. If you've got kids listening, shut their ears for a minute. But she called Nuzzi. She described her as a fame-hungry bitch who sucked at her job. Morgan, communications director Barbara Morgan with Anthony Weiner's staff now, also called Nuzzi a slutbag, twat, and cunt. I'm sorry, folks. I would think, I've done communications for a few campaigns around town myself. Okay? I know from personal experience that anytime you're talking to the media, and I am the media today, so, people talk to me and they always hold back. But anytime you're talking to the media, you always assume you're on the record. She tried to make a statement later to Business Insider that, the apology thing, in a moment of frustration, I used inappropriate language in what I thought was an off-the-record conversation. It was wrong, and I am very, very sorry. This is the typical game. But what people don't really understand is this is normal behavior for the likes of Barbara Morgan or people who work on these campaign staffs. They talk about their staffs and people on those staffs like dogs. What Morgan was saying about Nuzzi, she says about everybody. There's not a doubt in my mind about that. Being involved with some campaigns, what goes on in the banner that goes on behind the scenes would really shock a lot of the voters. It's like the whole deal with Mitch McConnell and the private conversation he was having concerning Ashley Judd months ago. That's a common conversation. There's nothing unusual about that. The only thing that makes things unusual when you get into a situation like Weiner's campaign with Barbara Morgan and her diatribe on Nuzzi is the fact that Barbara Morgan got caught because she was stupid enough to say it to a media person who had already identified themselves as a media person, was calling for her response in another story, automatically on the record. And this person is a communications director of what? That ought to tell you just even more. If you didn't have questions about Anthony Weiner based on his sexting charges and all the other crap that this moron does, you certainly can now question his judgment when it comes to even hiring somebody as simple as a communications director. If he can't hire a communications director who's not any smarter than that, then I wouldn't trust him to hire a dog catcher for the city of New York. That's just the way it is. So, I wanted to make sure we got that out there because I thought that was very, very funny when I read it. You guys really need to go to TPM. As a matter of fact, for you guys who are in the chat room, I'll go ahead and put a link in there right now for you because I think you'll really enjoy this. But those are the kind of things that go on every day. And I have no clue why nobody is holding them accountable. I really don't. It's fascinating to me. It really is. Moving on. Another story. We're going to get into some of the national things that are starting to be a big concern. First of all, U.S. Army PFC Bradley Manning was acquitted yesterday on one charge, and that was of aiding the enemy. Aiding the enemy was the most serious charge that Bradley Manning faced, but he was convicted of espionage, theft, and practically every other account that he was charged with for giving his secrets to WikiLeaks. So for all intents and purposes, he's probably going to spend the rest of his life in prison, regardless of whether he was, aiding the enemy or not. based on what he leaked. What's interesting about this is Bradley Manning actually, he is the one that released, if everybody remembers the WikiLeaks that started all of this, and Julian Assange had put it out there, and now Assange has been on the radar for a long time. He's holed up in an embassy and won't move anywhere. You know, the thing that started all of this was Bradley Manning actually putting out and sending a tape or a recording to WikiLeaks that showed our helicopters bombing and shooting civilians. It was wrong, it was intentional, and it was illegal. But the military won't do anything about it. That's the kind of stuff they hide. Manning was so appalled by it that he leaked it. So the question for a lot of people is, should Bradley Manning be in jail for outing an illegal crime? And he has the evidence of it. It isn't just like he went out and alleged this. He actually gave the evidence. But is that evidence considered illegal because it was military property? There's a lot of people who ask that question, and I don't know that I have the right answer for you on that either. You know, as a military veteran, I can assure you that, you know, for me, I would almost consider it an act of treason. But the fact that every bit of this was illegal, the acts were very illegal, it was costing lives, who is the real criminal here? Those guys in the military who were doing this action, taking this action, they were destroying the peace, goodwill, or the good name of the United States around the world, or Bradley Manning, who did the only thing he thought was right to do, because the only thing he felt he could do, to bring this atrocity to the attention of U.S. officials so that we would get accountability. That's a moral dilemma, isn't it? You guys got to think that one through. And finally, I've got to get to this story. There's a lot of other things I want to talk about, but I really want to get to this. We've got a top secret, dun-dun-dun, you guessed it, folks, a top secret NSA program once again that is out there destroying what we think is a constitution. Its name, X Key Score. It's called the X Key Score. It's a top secret NSA program that allows their analysts to search databases that contain emails, online chats, the browsing histories, anything you want on millions and millions of people. Now, the government is acting like this only applies to foreigners on foreign land. That's a lie. We know this because of Edward Snowden. But this thing can actually check you out and hijack you and pay attention to everything you do in real time. In real time. This should disturb the hell out of everybody and anybody that's out there. When we have a government that can go out there and check everything you're doing, and this is considered perfectly legal, by the way, the analysts are not required to get any prior authorization to do this. They're not required to get a search warrant signed off. They're not required to do anything. They do this all the time. It is alarming because Snowden says that he could sit at his desk and wiretap anybody from you to your accountant, a federal judge, or even the president, as long as he had a personal email to work off of. So if the government has your personal email, they can check anything you want to through the Digital Network Intelligence, the DNI. You know, X Key Score has a presentation that claims that the program itself covers nearly everything that a typical user does on the Internet, including emails, websites, the websites they visit, any search engines, you know, any metadata. You guys have heard the name metadata. You know, you look at all of this and you're like, wow, how do they have the authority or the right to do that? They do. They have the technological capability to target even U.S. people without a warrant, as long as they have an email or an IP address. The analysts can track anything and everything you're doing, all the way down to your metadata. So you know, it's interesting. And let's see, the chat room. What do you mean if the gov has a person's email? Well, you know, I'm actually trying to be real polite there. We know the gov has all of our email. We know that if they don't have it, they're going to get it. We know this. Okay, I can't argue with your question. I was trying to be very polite. You know, and the reality is, and no, there's no question. I love the chat room. No, there's no question. I was just trying to be polite. But the reality is that the government can spy on you for any time, for anything that they want to do. Anytime they want to find information on you, they just go and take it. They can also manipulate that data. Did you guys know that? They can manipulate that data any way they want to. So if you put an innocent comment on a Facebook post, they can go in and manipulate that data to make it look like you're some kind of a terrorist. I'll be honest with you. I take copies of anything and everything that I post. If I'm in the middle of a conversation on a social media site, you know, and with what we do, I mean, you know, we've got to have social media because we run a media network here. So you have to involve social media on that. You know, and thanks to the thousands of you guys who follow us, by the way. But when you look at this in play, you know, I have these conversations, and I actually have to keep them. I do record them. I'll go through. If it's something that I think is serious, that I think is going to present a problem somewhere down the road that somebody could easily try to manipulate, that could present what I wanted to say in a negative manner, I'll go ahead and copy it. I'll paste it. I'll do whatever I got to do. But I keep a record of that conversation. If it's good enough for the government, then it's good enough for me and you, right? That's what we're talking about. You know, and so when we look at what X Key Score is doing, now the good news is this. If there's any good news at all, it's this. That yes, they're doing this, but because they have so many records, millions and millions of records that they're taking, they don't stay in the databases more than a few days. They can't keep it longer than that. They can't keep it longer than that. So, you know, if they are spying on you, and believe me, I get spied on. I've got IP addresses and everything else. It takes me right back to the office of the president, Washington, D.C. I even posted those IP addresses publicly over a week ago. Because these are the people that are watching what I do, what I put out on the website, and they listen to this radio show. And I know they're listening now. The IP address goes right to the office of the president. So, you know, we know where they're coming from. If they can spy, why can't we? So I pay attention to everything. And I'll keep records in their original form to protect myself. And that's what I'm telling you guys to do. It's something that really, truly has to be thought of. Because if not, guys, you're in big trouble. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break. When we get back, we'll try to get into a few other things. $4.1 million settlement on behalf of a 25-year-old college student because of some crazy stuff out of DEA. Rand Paul and Chris Christie are going back and forth. You know, but Rand Paul's amendment to stop aid to Egypt was denied. You can thank your Republicans for that. And why, I have no idea. And then we're going to maybe get into some stupid stuff by Nancy Pelosi and probably some Obamacare stuff as well. Don't forget, folks, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers to talk live. For you guys in the queue, push that little number 1 on your dial pad, and we will get you on the air live. We're going to take a break. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back to the Ed Spencer Show right here on MVM Radio Network. Can you handle the truth? That's what we've been talking about all night, is the truth. The question is, can you handle it? Most people can't. They really can't. If you look at everything that's going on around this country, in every situation, I don't care if it's the Trayvon Martin shooting, the Obama economy and Obamacare, you know, or we get into the latest stories, we're talking about the NSA. Most people can't handle the truth. They don't want to look at the reality of what's really going on here. And what's really going on here, folks, is we are being led like sheep to slaughter. And what they're slaughtering is the U.S. Constitution. That's what's going on. But you've got to be able to handle that truth. And most people can't. That's just the way it is. You know, and speaking of truth and being able to handle things, man, I've got to tell you, this whole thing with Rand Paul and Chris Christie is getting comical. It's getting comical. And I tell you why. Because the truth is, Chris Christie has no shot of being the Republican nominee for president in 2016. No shot at all. He has done everything he can to shoot himself in the foot, and he's telling the whole world he's thinking about it. He has proven to be a liberal in a conservative clothing, and I say that intentionally because Chris Christie wants a handout from anybody and everybody and goes out and brags about Barack Obama when he gets it. There's not much about Chris Christie that is conservative, and I've got to be honest with you. I've got to be totally honest with you. It is very disturbing to me to see that. Somebody in the chat room is saying that Christie is a younger version of McCain. Oh, I think you're probably right. He may be McCain on steroids in about 5 or 10 years. And for our 2 cents in the chat room, how is the Constitution being destroyed? When we throw the Fourth Amendment out the window and we let society, our government decides that it's okay to spy on every activity, on every American, anytime they want to, without cause and no court order to allow them to do so, that's destroying the Constitution. Sorry. And if you want more examples of that, I'll get to that in just 1 minute, because we're also going to talk about Egypt. Of course they are. They aren't doing that. Of course they are. Of course they are. They don't have the time or the personnel. We just had admitted that they're looking through millions and billions of records on American people. How much time or personnel does it take to target you as one individual because you don't like your politics? How much time did it take for the IRS to go out and target 501c3 conservative groups? Tell me they aren't targeting. They can pick and choose who they want to target anytime they want to. So to get back to this Rand Paul Chris Christie thing, this is very, very funny to me, because Chris Christie continues going after Rand Paul and talking all this garbage. And then, you know, Rand Paul, of course, keeps shooting back. Rand Paul just said that Chris Christie is the king of bacon, talking about bacon. But he does have one point. He makes a point on CNN with Will Blitzer, says it's not helping the party for Chris Christie to start a war with him. It's a big mistake. It's not very smart. It's not a good way to grow the party. Why would he want to pick a fight with the one guy who has a chance to grow the party by appealing to the youth and appealing to people who would like to see a more moderate and less aggressive foreign policy? That's what Paul's words for Christie. So, you know, that's okay. But the point being here, though, this is turning into a two-year-old slugfest, all because the presidency is on the line in 2016. That's what it's turned into. You know, so we've got to look at this stuff. You know, to go on even further, well, it looks like our good friend R2Cents has decided to log out of the chat room. You know, I tell them the truth of what happens. They couldn't handle it, so they left. Hey, sorry. Remember, I said people can't handle the truth. So here's another truth, and here's another reality that we have to pay attention to. The U.S. Senate today voted on Rand Paul's amendment to Senate Bill of Resolution 1243. Amendment number 1739 was Rand Paul's amendment, and that amendment was going to stop military foreign assistance to Egypt, not by adding something to the law, but it was only reinforcing that we needed to stop military foreign assistance to Egypt by enforcing current law that the Obama administration is violating. Current law says that the United States cannot provide foreign assistance to nations that experience a military coup d'etat. Now think about that. Current U.S. law states that the United States cannot provide foreign assistance to nations that experience a military coup d'etat. Folks, what just happened in Egypt? What just happened in Egypt? A military coup d'etat. They ousted their democratically elected president. Now, it doesn't mean, or it doesn't matter if you think that the elections were rigged or not. That's Egypt's problem. But you just had a military coup d'etat that ousted the Egyptian president. And we're doubling down and sending Egypt more money. But I tell you what's more disturbing to me, I mean, other than the fact we're sending Egypt money, which I don't think we should be, what's more disturbing to me is that we've got basically a unified front that decided to deny the amendment. The amendment was tabled. The vote was 13-86. 13-86. You heard me right. How many Republicans sided with the Democrats to continue giving millions of dollars of aid to Egypt after this military coup d'etat? I decided that they didn't have to follow U.S. law to do so. How many? Now, one thing that was part of this amendment was that the money we were going to send to Egypt would be redirected to the Bridges and Critical Corridors Fund. The Bridges and Critical Corridors. What that fund is exactly what it says. It was a fund to rebuild the nation's crumbling infrastructure, roads, and bridges. The majority of the bridges in this country need to be rebuilt before they fall down. We won't fund that, but we'll spend billions of dollars that we borrow from China to give to other nations around the world instead of spending it, fixing up our infrastructure, helping our economy grow by the created jobs and everything else that goes with it. That doesn't make sense to the Democrats, but apparently it doesn't make sense to the Republicans either. So when we say that the Republicans, the Democrats, and the Uniparty, if you will, is alive and well, here's great proof of that. Here's great proof of that. They are one and the same. They don't care about you. They don't care about this country. They really don't. And I liked the fact, I liked the speech that Rand Paul gave, because he points out the obvious. He uses Detroit to begin his speech. And you know what? I'm going to put that in here, too. I'm going to put that in the chat room for you guys to look over yourself as well. I want you guys to see that. So, you know, you ain't got to worry about me reading to you word for word. But there you go. It's in the chat room now. But, you know, when you look at this, Rand Paul points out the obvious. Detroit lies in ruins. Houses are all are littered the landscape. Detroit, we know, is getting ready to file bankruptcy. They've been trying to do it. You got some judge playing games with it. They're nearly $20 billion in debt. City employees don't know if they're going to get paid. More than half the street lights in Detroit don't work. Everything is in a shambles. It takes over an hour for a 911 call because they don't have enough police officers. But we're going to send billions of dollars around the world, and we're going to send over $1 billion to Egypt. So, yeah, you got to look at this. So Egypt's going to spend billions of dollars for fighter planes, tanks, whatever. Detroit is going to suffer for it. They already are. And Detroit is just the tip of the iceberg. Remember, we've already had cities around this country already file bankruptcy. But they have not seen anything like we're getting ready to see once they have to start worrying even more about these pensions. And right here in Kentucky, we're the number one pension problem state. We have the number one state with pension problems in the U.S. We're next. Nobody wants to talk about that reality, but we're next. But as we go forward, though, Paul points out the obvious. Detroit's decaying. Chicago is nothing but gangland warfare. There were more people killed in Chicago last year than total in Afghanistan. What does that tell you guys? More people killed in Chicago than Afghanistan. But instead of spending these billions of dollars on the nation's infrastructure, going to the inner cities and helping the cities create jobs, do all the right things, what happens? We're going to send it to Egypt to buy planes and tanks for their military who just took out a president. Military coup d'etat. Oh, but don't worry about it because our Constitution says it's illegal, or our laws, I should say it's illegal. But that doesn't matter because we're not going to do things legally. So it's not bad enough that we look at this. Obama wants to build a $34 million fort in Afghanistan. Hillary Clinton wants to spend another $80 million on a consulate in Afghanistan, neither of which will ever be used. So, you know, I may be the wrong guy here. I don't know. Maybe I'm just way too conservative for most people to listen to. But do we see any problem with that? You guys that are liberal out there that listen to this show, can you tell me what we really, truly hope to accomplish by sending billions of dollars to Egypt or anywhere else overseas while our infrastructure is crumbling to the ground? The economy is in a total shambles. We don't have enough police to do their job. You know, and the ones we do that are out there have turned into the same thugs that the gangs have because they're frustrated. Can anybody tell me what we're accomplishing with liberalism? Anybody at all? Because I don't get it. I really don't. Even if you're not a liberal, if you can bring a sound argument to the table, try to let me see the other side because I'm just not seeing it. What I'm seeing is liberalism has failed this country in every city across this nation. It is failing. And we, the people, are the ones being destroyed by it. I don't get it. I really don't. Senator Paul, whether you like him, love him, or hate him, is telling the truth. And one of those truths that he's talking about is that when you give foreign aid, it doesn't go to the people. It goes to the foreign dictators and despots. When you give foreign aid, it's going to buy you a nice hotel, or it's going to buy you a nice, you know, mansion somewhere. It's not going to buy bread for the people in Egypt sitting on the street there. It's going to buy jets so that the families, so that the political families can move around. But it's not going to build roads or infrastructure or help people get, you know, cars or anything else or any kind of structure to create a job. It's not going to the people. It's just like North Korea. You know, North Korea was receiving food and humanitarian aid for years. And every report that's ever come out of North Korea says that the North Korean army gets everything first, and if there's anything left, then the people might get something. So your military and your leaders are the ones who are profiting, not the poor people. So again, how is liberalism helping anything? I don't get it. When we look at places like Detroit, Chicago, Jefferson County, Alabama, you know, Birmingham, and a whole host of other places, that are either decaying in ruins or on the way to doing so, every one of those have been led by liberal Democrats. Half of which, in each city, they have one thing in common. These liberal Democrats are being indicted and going to jail for theft, kickbacks, bribes, and everything else that all led to the cities going bankrupt or destroyed. Liberalism. That's liberalism. I'm still waiting for an argument. I don't get one. I really don't. And it's fascinating to me because when you start having these conversations, as we found out a few minutes ago in a chat room with one of our people there, you know, you can't talk the truth because as soon as you tell the truth, they say, no, it's not the truth. And you say, yes, it is, and you give examples like the Fourth Amendment and things like that. They go ahead and leave. They go ahead and leave. Why? Because they can't defend their argument. They can't defend their argument. That's the problem. You know, and we have to look at these things logically. And I tell you, there was something I saw today, and I'm going to tell you this straight off of Facebook, but I found it very, very interesting. Somebody said that this came from the Canadian's version of David Letterman's Top 10. I don't think so, but I honestly, truly have not researched to see whether that's where it originated from or not, because I don't really care, because what this is a top 10 list of American stupidity. And I want you guys to hear some of these because it's very important. Only in America, this is number 10, only in America could politicians talk about the greed of the rich at a $35,000 a plate campaign fundraising event. Is that hypocrisy, folks? $35,000 a plate to sit there and scream and whine about the sins of the rich? How can you sit there? How can you sit there? I thought that was interesting. You know, a couple other ones. Well, I guess I ought to go through all of them. I don't want to tease you too much. Only in America, number 9. Could people claim that the government still discriminates against black Americans when they have a black president, a black attorney general? 20% of the federal workforce is black, while only 14% of the population is black. 40+% of all federal entitlements go to black Americans, which is 3 times the rate to go to whites and 5 times the rate to go to Hispanics. You know, only in America, number 8, only in America could you have the two people most responsible for our tax code, Timothy Geithner, who's the head of the Treasury Department, and Charles Rangel, who once ran the Ways and Means Committee. Both turn out to be tax cheaters and tax dodgers and tax evaders who are in favor of, you guessed it, higher taxes. Number 7, only in America can you have terrorists kill people in the name of Allah and have the media primarily react by fretting that Muslims might be harmed because of the backlash. Are you kidding me? That happens every day. You can't talk about God, but we must praise Allah, right? Number 6, only in America would they make people who want to legally become American citizens wait for years in their home countries, pay tens of thousands of dollars for the privilege, while they discuss letting anyone who sneaks in the country illegally just magically become American citizens. Rewarding illegal citizens, rewarding illegals for coming across the border with citizenship, while we have people who have spent years and thousands of dollars trying to obtain it legally. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Only in America could the people who believe in balancing the budget and sticking by the country's constitution be thought of as extremists. Now, here in Kentucky, Rand Paul and Tom Massey come to mind. They want to stick to the Constitution. They want to balance the budget. And even mainstream so-called conservative Republicans paint them as extremists. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Number 4, only in America could you need to present a driver's license to cash a check or buy alcohol, but not to vote. Self-explanatory. Number 3, only in America could people demand the government investigate whether oil companies are gouging the public because the price of gas went up when the return on equity invested in a major U.S. oil company is less than half of a company making tennis shoes. Only in America could a government collect more tax dollars from the people than any nation in recorded history and still spend $1 trillion more than it brings in every year. A total spending of negative $7 million per minute. And yet our politicians complain that we still don't have enough money. Pretty interesting, isn't it? And finally, number one, only in America could the rich people who pay 86% of all income taxes be accused of not paying their fair share by people who don't pay any income taxes at all. I thought that list was pretty good. I thought it brought out so many hypocrisies, regardless of who the author is or where it came from. I thought it put out so many hypocrisies. And this is what people around the world look at with us. This is what they look at. Then we've got NSA. We've got all these constitutional violations. And we're sending money to Egypt. To Egypt. I really don't understand it. And I don't think I ever will. I really don't. You know, and if people think that I'm wrong, you know, I want to put this out there. Charles Krauthammer at Fox News. Yeah, I know a lot of people don't like, well, Fox News is just conservative and they slant the news. Well, so does CNN, MSNBC, insert media here. They all slant the news for whatever they want. But Charles Krauthammer gives an opinion speech that I think is very, very good. He points out the fact that he finds it astonishing that Barack Obama is going around deploring the state of the economy. The growing income inequality, chronic unemployment, staggering middle class income. Going nuts over that stuff. Like he's been out of town throughout his whole presidency. He's trying to act 5 years into it like this is the Bush economy, folks. When does he take responsibility? When does he take responsibility? I don't know. I'll give you some numbers in a minute because I want to go to the phones. This is Paul Holliger with Stop It. How are you, sir?
Good evening. Why should President Obama take responsibility for anything? You know, that's not his style.
Agreed.
He's
Agreed.
An attorney. He's an attorney, for God's sakes. You know, attorneys work both sides of the fence.
Well, that's
care.
Why that's why all
paid.
Attorneys should be. Yep. I agree. So, what's on your mind, man?
Well, a story that I saw this morning that was just kind of indicative of all the issues that you kind of touched on tonight. The Huffington Post, you know, that great news reporting organization that never, never mixes social commentary with hard news.
Sure.
Oh, no, they do that. No. Anyway, they reported on a death in Detroit. A death in Detroit. Now,
okay.
This was ordinarily in most communities a death in a community. Even one in this case here that was suspicious, and the cause of death was not readily apparent because the victim died in a club and was subsequently found by his brother at the same club. This was in Detroit. The Huffington Post thought it was newsworthy because this guy, which was a mid-40-year-old man, happened to be the father of 24 children.
Yeah, I kind of thought that's where you were going when you started talking about that. Yeah, who was paying for the 24 children? They didn't tell us that, did they?
No, that wasn't. But, you know, the people who knew him said he was a real good, loving father, and his kids miss him. They think the world of him. But didn't Detroit just recently file for bankruptcy?
Yes.
And doesn't Detroit have awfully liberal rules and laws that assist people regardless of their means? I mean, Louisville supposedly is one of the most compassionate cities, but I don't recall us having gone bankrupt because of that compassion. And here, Detroit, the home of the 24 children dad who died under mysterious circumstances, has gone bankrupt. Now, Ed, Detroit has got to be more compassionate than Louisville, because they can afford to have a person like that with all his dependents living in the city. Oh, wait a minute. That's right. Detroit shrunk from 2 million to 700,000. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, part of that too, if I remember the story correctly, and forgive me if I'm wrong, because I haven't seen this since about, I don't know, 9 o'clock this morning. But part of that story too, if I'm not mistaken, these guys were basically living in an abandoned house or abandoned warehouse or something somewhere. That tells me that the taxpayers were paying for this father, 24 kids. Now, he could be a loving father all he wants to be. Apparently, he's a loving man, 24 kids. They're not all with the same woman. They're with multiple women. That's what I don't get. And people see no problem. Oh, this poor man had 24 kids he had to provide for. No, this poor man had a responsibility to provide for his children. And he didn't care about going out and using a rubber and not bringing kids into this world that he couldn't provide for. And no, he depended on us to pay for it for him. So he got to go out and have all the pleasure. You know, for me or you, Paul, we have to go out to a bar, spend $50 on drinks, or at least buy a dinner somewhere for a female. You know, sweet talk or lie our butts off and everything else just to get her into bed one night. You know, but probably don't want to spend the rest of our night with a woman, or the rest of our life with a woman like that. So we're probably going to use protection. This guy's getting all the benefit without having to cost him a dime. You know, and I'm sorry the guy's dead, 24 kids lost her father, but really, don't give me that as a great, you know, as a poor me story. And I'll tell you something, I'm glad you brought that up, because, Paul, this is very interesting, too. I want you to hear this, because I think you're going to like it. BizPack Review. The burden of child care, formerly known as motherhood, has no place in a society where women should be out earning a living, according to Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, my God.
In an interview with NPR.
Nancy Pelosi said this.
Yep. In an interview with NPR Radio that aired over the weekend, Nancy Pelosi said, you know, that she discussed her latest program, rather. The program is called When Women Succeed, America Succeeds, an economic agenda for women and families. But she made it very clear that she doesn't believe raising children, that she doesn't consider raising children to be acceptably successful. Women should be made free to earn without carrying the burden of child care. So part of her economic agenda says that we have to have adequate funding for child care programs. So the government must, with our taxes, pay for child care programs to solve the problem so that women can be free to go out and earn money without carrying the burden of child care. Because it's bad, because families are generally left on their own to provide child care. Do we need any further proof?
This country... How did this country get to be what it once was, the greatest country on the face of the earth? How did we get to be that without
social
all
liberals.
Those government programs? No. How did we get there
before all
these programs and before all these do-gooders like Nancy Pelosi came on? How on God's green earth did this country survive? It's a miracle.
It is a miracle. It's a miracle that none of us are dead right now. My mom and dad didn't have daycare centers back in my day to raise their kids. I didn't use daycare centers to raise mine. My children are my responsibility. But women should have no obligation whatsoever to child care responsibility, according to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, here's the good news, Ed. The women of this country, on the whole, and probably by very wide margins, they are smarter than Nancy Pelosi. They're not buying what she's selling because they know that they are critical to the survival of this country. And most of the women that I know and have met over many years are very responsible women. If they happen to have children, they are very responsible toward that particular role. If they choose to become career women, they're very responsible in that role. I'm just amazed that Nancy Pelosi, a woman, makes such a reckless statement trying to impugn all of those tens of millions of American women who are out there making it work without Nancy Pelosi's help, nor without her intervention, nor without a whole lot of assistance from any government. So,
but as much as you say that, Paul... I got to interrupt you, because as much as you say that, women are the ones who elect this idiot. So they're believing, they're falling for it. She's
well,
the minority
leader. Hang on. No, California women Okay. Remember the Beach Boys way a long time ago talked about California girls? Well, all of that stuff that they sang about, the California, they turned into California women. And look what the difference is. Listen, put a Midwestern woman in these positions, and you're going to get some good common sense, and you're going to get stuff solved. Midwestern
so explain
women
to me this.
How come
the House Democrats, how have the House Democrats not had the same common sense? Because Nancy Pelosi is the House Minority Leader. She had to win an election of the Democrats to get that job, and she won it quite easily. I mean, that's the whole thing for me. So Nancy Pelosi believes that a woman, you know, has the right to go to work, and nobody's arguing that, but she believes that we should have to pay for her child care so that she can go out and work.
No,
because families,
she doesn't believe it.
That's what
she
she's saying.
She doesn't believe that, Ed. Yeah,
well,
Pelosi says a lot of stuff that she doesn't mean. Think of her as a female Al Sharpton, okay?
Sure.
You know, the most dangerous spot on the face of the planet when it comes to Al Sharpton is between him and a television camera, and Pelosi is no different. She's no different.
Well, and she gets caught by her own words, too, because in regards to Obamacare, what's really fascinating, too, is in regards to Obamacare, you know, she was last year was quoted as saying that Obamacare was going to lower premiums, that the American people were going to pay less money for their health care. And now today she denies it, even though we've got her on record doing that. You know, but to get back to this story, you know, she says that there's plenty of reasons why a woman who has kids might have to work. I totally get that. Our economy in this nation today is built on a two-income family. I totally get that. My family has not been spared from that. Me and my wife both worked raising our kids. We both worked at the same time. But we made the sacrifices necessary to take care of our kids ourselves. We worked opposite shifts. She worked day shift, I'd work nights. If I worked days, she'd work nights. But there was somebody there to raise our kids. And our kids were not the responsibility of our neighbors. They were ours.
Well, again, going back, you're getting all worked up. We're going to have to put you on that television show all worked up. You're getting all worked up over Nancy Pelosi, because Nancy Pelosi is just so full of herself, she can't stand it. And here's a good example. If Nancy Pelosi and all the other Democrats in this country were really concerned about mothers, young mothers, working women in general, answer me this, Ed. Why haven't not a single one of those Democrats sought to eliminate at the federal level the substandard minimum wage imposed upon the food service industry workers, which is a grand $2.13 an hour, and the food service industry has a disproportionately large share of women, both mothers and non-mothers, working in it? Why don't we get more money in their pockets by increasing
the
minimum wage? Why is that, Ed? You know, Tell me another industry in this country in which there is a minimum wage that is something different than the, what is it, 7 1/4 right now, 7.35, whatever it is. Something different. Where do we have that? Where do we have a totally separate minimum wage for an entire industry that you can't even put food on the table at that wage? $2.13 an hour? And,
well,
you know, don't even get started on the amount of abuse that these workers have to endure at many of the places that they sign on. Okay.
I don't know where you've been eating at lately. I don't know where you've been eating at lately, Paul. I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I don't know where you've been eating at lately.
That tip thing goes out there.
No.
Because if the tip concept was a great concept, Ed, then why don't we have attorneys charge $2.13 an hour, and then if they do a great job, we'll tip them?
Well,
okay?
In a lot of cases.
A great idea,
now, hold on, Paul. I'm going to interrupt you, Paul. All right? You got to listen for a minute, because here's the thing. For one thing, they're already talking about the minimum wage going up. They're trying to take the waitresses and waiters and everything else up to $7.35 an hour and raise the minimum wage for everybody else up to over $10 an hour. That is stupid, in my opinion, to continue raising minimum wage. Let me finish. Now, wait a minute.
It's not happening. It's not happening.
I appreciate it.
Don't buy it, Ed. Don't buy it.
Paul, let me finish. I'm just telling you what they're trying to do. I know it's political banter. You know it's political matter. Okay? But I'm telling you what they're using out there right now. Now, here's the thing. If a restaurant takes a waiter or waitress, and by the way, I don't know where you've been eating lately, but a lot of the restaurants that I've been eating in for the last several months have gotten quite a lot more males doing server work now than I've ever seen before. In a lot of places, I'm seeing a 50-50 mix, which really surprised even me. But to get back to this, if you're looking at waiters and waitresses going up to $7.35 an hour, okay, how much are they going to get on tips? The restaurants are going to raise the prices of their food exponentially, so you're going to lose some business from that. People aren't going to go out to a restaurant where they're typically spending $30 or $40 now going out to eat for two people and jump that up to $50, $60, or even $70 for the same thing they're getting before and leave a tip. It's not going to happen.
You just shot your argument in the head. You just killed your argument because McDonald's and Burger King have for a number of years raised their wages that they have paid their employees, not because they were mandated by the federal government, because it made competitive business sense. They were having trouble keeping people. Now, has your McDonald's fries and has your quarter pounder and have your burgers gone up exponentially? No.
Yes.
They have not gone up exponentially.
Yes,
they
have. As soon as McDonald's started raising wages, my $2.99
Big
Mac value meal went to $4.99. So it did. They did raise their prices.
Power exponentially is big. It's not just simply an increase. It is huge.
Paul.
Be careful.
Listen, I'm just telling you the way it is. All right, I'm just telling you the way it is. Those prices do raise, but you bring up the most interesting point of all: the market took care of it. Took care of it. McDonald's couldn't find the right people, so they paid more money. They gradually increased their prices to offset those costs so it didn't affect their profits. They didn't do it overnight. It was a gradual change in the way that they approached their employees, and it was a gradual change on the way that they increased their prices and slid it in and made people get used to it. If you change the minimum wage overnight like they want to do, that's not a gradual change. And people will drop off accordingly. I'll be honest with you. If there's a waiter or a waitress out there making $7.35 an hour, and I'm paying 40% more for my food, I probably don't have the money or probably not going to spend the 20% tip that they're expecting in addition to that. And I'll be just as blunt with you. Today, waiters and waitresses, and that was something I was speaking about earlier actually online, today's waiters and waitresses, I'm not impressed with. I have yet to walk into a restaurant in the last year where a waiter or waitress actually gave what I would consider good service.
Do you tip them anyway?
Yes. No.
Why are you rewarding?
I'm not.
Either you are or you aren't. Which one is it?
I just said no. That's the whole point. I mean,
okay.
20% tip, they say they leave a 15 or an 18% tip, depending on which expert you listen to. But I'm one of those dual tippers. If you do a good job, a job that I feel like you've earned your reward, you're going to get between 20 and 25% tip without question. Without question. If you don't do a good job, you do a mediocre job, you just drop to 10%. If I don't like your service at all, I'm not going to leave you a tip and I'm going to complain to the manager. And I do that frequently, believe it or not. And it's not that I'm some kind of a prude who expects a lot in return. I just expect friendly service, I expect timely service, and I expect courtesy. Anybody
and Ed, why is this model only in the food service business? If it's a good model, then it needs to be used in other industries.
I'm not arguing with you about the model.
That's my whole argument, is that as much as you want to sit here and focus on the individual waiter or waitress or the individual restaurant, I want to focus on the bigger picture, and this is a national issue, and it amazes me that our national labor unions, not a single one of them, have decided to try to do any organizing. They know that it's a very, very – Ed, but they're not doing it.
They're not
organizing.
You know why they're not pushing it? You know why they're not pushing organizing so much with the waiters and waitresses around the
country? There's two things. First of all, it's going to be very expensive to take on an effort that large. And secondly, the turnover is huge right now. And they're not going to be able to rely upon a steady dues-paying base if the turnover is so high right now.
So, no, I don't even see that, Paul. I tell you what the real reason is. Most unions take a percentage of your pay. They either take 5 or 6% of your pay each month for union dues, or they take a couple hours of your pay. Let's use Ford, for example, Ford Motor Company, okay? Ford Motor Company and the UAW, those employees make $27 an hour on average. With that in mind, those union members pay 2 hours' wages every month to the union. So every month, like clockwork, that union is getting $54 per employee for union dues. Now, when you compare that to a waitress or a waiter making $2.13 an hour, the best that they're going to be able to get is $5 a month in union dues. It's not worth it to them. They want the money. They don't care about the employee. It's not cost-effective.
I think everyone who's listening to the show understands that that's the union's motivation. Okay, but remember, the union also goes around telling people that they're for the working person. And I can tell you on this issue here, the unions have taken a sabbatical. They've taken a rain check. They don't want to do the hard work. The people in the food service industry, when it comes to unions, the unions say, when you all get your act together, you can come to us, grovel at our feet, and we will come along and take your money to do a substandard job of representing you. But again, the unions
what we just pointed out?
Have lost their way a long time ago. But that's another show. That's a whole other show.
I was going to say, I'll tell you something else we've lost. We've lost time. Time has quickly went by us. We are way into overdrive, and we need to wrap it up. Paul, thanks so much for the call, man. I appreciate it, even though it was late. I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. You know, folks, we've given you a lot to think about tonight. Where does accountability begin? That's the question. You know, we can talk all we want to about the Metro Council ethics here in Louisville. We can talk about NSA spying. We can talk about people like Edward Snowden, Bradley Manning, insert name here, the whistleblowers. We can talk about everything we want to. We can talk about Nancy Pelosi thinking that women should be able to go to work and we should have to pay for her kids so any woman can go out there and have 10 kids and we've got to take care of them for them. We can talk about that all we want to. But where does accountability and responsibility begin? It begins with each and every one of you, each and every one of us. We elect these clowns and we allow them to do this to us. That's our fault. That's our fault. Everybody that listens to this show, everybody in America, needs to look in the mirror and say, wow, why did I allow this? I'm getting shafted, but I gave them permission to do it. That's our fault. Accountability and responsibility begins and ends with each and every one of us. And until we learn to adapt to that great reality, we're going to continue going further and further down a path of non-resistance and allow ourselves to be washed up as the greatest nation on earth. You have to make a commitment today to take that responsibility. You have to make a commitment today to be accountable to yourself. If you can't make that commitment, you're not going to listen to the thing we're saying. You just want to argue. Anybody can argue. It takes a real man or a real woman to stand up against what's wrong in this country. So it's time to stand up, put up or shut up. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, 7 o'clock, the TNT show. Dale the Truth will be back next week. Myself or Rob Chapman will be here tomorrow night. At 7, so I guess you'll have to tune in then for the big surprise. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.